Welcome everyone to episode 469 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to finish up our league pass rankings that we started to release earlier this week. So this is part two of our league pass rankings with my normal co-host Morten Jensen. We also have Adam Frommel and Dan Favale back of the Hardwood Knox podcast. Before we get into it, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews, and we're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. With all that said, let's get back into the League Pass rankings. All right, let's move to our 15th ranked team, the Minnesota Timberwolves. Again, a lot of variance here. Hardwood Knox guys much higher on the Timberwolves than the NBA podcast
guys. I'm sensing a theme. There is like the podcast hive minds that are going in. Yeah.
So Adam had the highest at six, and then Dan was eighth. I was 20th. Mort was 26th. So Adam, is this all just an Anthony Edwards UGA love right here?
It's not. I think you probably know how low I was on him going into the draft, and then have done just this total 180 based on the in-season improvement that we saw during that rookie season, where it now feels like he truly is on a trajectory toward like true stardom. But it is more than that. It's Karl Anthony Towns being healthy and motivated. It's Malik Beasley being available. It's seeing what D'Angelo Russell can do alongside a lineup that is fully intact. It's Jaden McDaniels, who Dan has completely convinced me to be in on over the last year plus. It's seeing what Naz Reid can do. It's the intensity that Josh Okogie brings on defense. This depth chart from top to bottom is filled with super intriguing pieces who fit together better than any Minnesota lineup has in the last decade, maybe.
Which and it's Anthony Edwards. Why they're going to trade them all for Ben Simmons. That is right. Yeah.
And that's why I have them 26th.
Because you are baking in a Ben Simmons trade for them?
Oh, I'm banking on that's going to happen. That's why I have them so much lower.
You wouldn't want to watch Ben Simmons, Anthony Edwards, and Karl-Anthony Towns. There's so many questions, but also potentially entertaining aspects of that trio. I don't. If you're expecting a Ben Simmons trade, lowering them for that is shocking to me.
It's because that's how I look at Ben Simmons. Like, he is aesthetically, from my point of view, one of the most boring ass NBA players I've ever seen.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I don't know, when he gets going downhill, even when he's not finishing at a high clip, like some of the passes he can make and the way the defenses react, I love watching that stuff.
I think it's because, this is probably a me thing as well, where I consistently look at his lack of development and his lack of flexibility. Like, for example, Brian and I talked about this on the last episode. Like, Brett Brown had one freaking demand of him, like take 1 3 per game, and he just was so reluctant to do it. And I think that's part of it. I really dislike players who are so devoted to keeping their own mentality of who they are intact, as opposed to actually getting better. We agree that he improved defensively because that was something he excelled at, but then offensively he just stagnated from year one, and that completely just sucked every ounce of enjoyment out of that thing.
My counterpoint would be the Sixers have been too good. So if you go on a worse team like the Timberwolves, you might be more willing to take jumpers.
Rich Paul, everyone. Rich Paul has joined us on the podcast today.
But even beyond that, like I think there's something to the idea of kind of divorcing yourself of the notion that every player is going to improve to hit their perceived peak. And like if you can do that with Simmons, and I grant that it's hard to do, there's still a lot to enjoy between the passing, the downhill element and transition, and just the defense. Like, it is fun to watch him on defense. It's less fun when you're watching him with the thoughts that he could be so much more floating around in the back of your mind.
Right.
Like, if you can move past those, and I'm not saying that you have to, because you can be disappointed in those, but if you're able to, like, it is still a fun player to watch, even if there's disappointment caked in.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think the part of the difficulty in me divorcing me from that is his personality. I think his personality is he's very abrasive. And I don't think that helps the situation. He's so stubborn in basically saying, I am this, this, and that. I want to be this, this, and that. like that just kind of shuts you off on it. But I hear what you're saying. I don't disagree. Like, I genuinely think that his right-handed hook shots are interesting. Like, if he started playing with the right hand, that might actually make it more interesting.
Oh my God. Kevin O'Connor has joined the podcast as well. Good. Good.
We are not talking about the Patrick Beverley factor here either, where it was preseason. He already tried to tattletale on Bones Highland for talking trash to the Timberwolves bench in preseason. And that's happening in the preseason. I don't know what Patrick Beverley gets punched. Maybe he punches somebody. Maybe he's just going to be the CP3 of the Timberwolves, where he's trying to dime out everybody else on the other team. But just throwing his mentality into what the Wolves have, I don't know, that intrigues me. I guess Ben Simmons can make this team less entertaining if you're thinking, all right, well, they're trading Jaden McDaniels, and I love watching him hustle on defense. They're trading D'Angelo Russell. I love watching his stupid decisions. They're trading Malik Beasley. Like, we're going to miss that. So the consolidation of it, perhaps that's why I could see moving them down. This team, though, whether it has Ben Simmons, whether it doesn't have Ben Simmons, Towns and Anthony Edwards, I think, just make the case by themselves. Yeah. Those two are just – and I feel like we don't – Towns is like – I don't know if he's underrated or people just don't appreciate how fun he is. Like, this dude's a seven-footer, is so balletic when he puts the ball on the floor, but will chuck all these threes, also can brutalize you in the post. Yeah, he's not the greatest defender, but it's not like the Timberwolves have put a bunch of defensive talent in front of him roughly ever, except for the year with maybe Jimmy Butler. So I just, between the Edwards-Towns 1-2 punch, I don't know how effective it's going to be, especially when you're looking at their defense. Although Anthony Edwards has shown flashes in the preseason of playing better, or at least in practice, if we haven't seen it in preseason games, they just might be one of the most entertaining, just purely entertaining 1-2 punches in the league to watch on a nightly basis.
So the Towns thing is the lack of newness for me. Like, I agree with every word you said, but in terms, like, I know the Towns is plays that way. So that kind of doesn't factor into what, like, I'm interested in seeing, because I know what he does. I know that he is what he is. Like, Edwards is probably the primary reason I don't have them 30th, to be honest with you, because he is that intriguing. Yeah. No, but again, and also, and this is part of the Sacramento Kings thing as well, like, when you have an organization that just completely drops the ball continuously, it does just make me want to detach. I mean, it's baked into that whole thing. You sit there and you basically convince yourself there's no hope for this franchise. So why bother investing myself, my time and everything into this thing when you have so many other games going on? But I hear what you're saying. Individually speaking, there are tremendous upside in terms of watchability. I don't disagree with that, but that's where my thing
you
comes
don't,
in. With
you don't like a team that's going to end up on the front homepage of TMZ, apparently.
No, see, that's the thing. I mean, in some cases, that
A-Rod is part of the team governorship now. Like, come on, they even have appeal off the court for wackiness. I will say, to the Towns point, I understand you rating it that way, where players that are just such knowns.
Yeah.
That being said, we've seen Karl-Anthony Towns play 85 games over the past 2 years. There might be like a little bit of a newness to Karl-Anthony Towns, especially because he was coming back from COVID last year. We know he was also coping with the death of his mother and a half dozen other family members. So I'm like raring to watch him play, because I feel like I haven't seen him play as much as I would like to over these past 2+ seasons.
Then I'll bump them up when he displays that he suddenly can average 7 assists or whatever. Like, if there's some newness to him that makes the entire product more appealing, I'll bump it up, because this isn't locked in stone. So it's like where we start out from the season. And as we all know, things change. Like, I'm already looking at the Golden State Warriors, and I'm looking at the recent Jordan Poole games and going, oh boy, I'm probably going to be jumping those up in the coming months. So I'm open to it. I just think the organization is a freaking mess, and that doesn't really appeal to me either.
More just out of curiosity, can you ballpark where you would have the Timberwolves if we could guarantee you that a Ben Simmons trade wouldn't happen?
Probably in the 15-16 range, about there.
Wow. You're hedging that hard against...
I Brian, you know as well as I do how much, you know, Ben Simmons has been a subject on this podcast.
Yeah.
And over the recent weeks and months, my opinion of the man and the player has just dropped so considerably week for week for week. Like from the beginning of the playoffs, essentially. It's just, yeah, I have zero faith in the way that he approaches the game. I have zero faith in how he will adapt himself to a new situation. I think he's so pig-headed and stubborn, uptight, entitled, that it's just he himself is going to lower my enjoyment of it. Like, hell, you know, I'll admit it. We faked the Philadelphia ranking, of course.
Ah, there it is.
Yeah, I'll say it. But if he is actually traded, the Sixers go up to like top 10 for me. Easy.
You don't even know who they're trading them for.
I don't care, Dan. I don't care. So Dan, they could trade him for Frank Ntilikina and it'd be fine.
Here's my thing. Then why would you have had them so low to begin with? Because as of right now, he's not going to play another game for the Sixers. At least that's what his camp is saying.
The Sixers, you mean?
Yeah, like you're saying, if you don't care who they trade Ben Simmons for,
yeah,
then shouldn't the Sixers be higher up on your list now then?
Oh, I just did it to screw Brian.
All right,
yeah,
fair.
There it is. Yeah. There it is. I before we move on from the Timberwolves, I'll say their offense is going to be really fun to watch. I just have grave concerns about their defense, and I don't know. Like, part of my rankings were trying to figure, you know, like, this isn't just like power rankings of like which teams are going to be good, which teams are going to be bad, but like, I'd like to learn something about how the title race factors in, or like, you know, which teams I think are going to be more relevant later in the season. And I think going against the Timberwolves team, who I project to finish in the bottom five defensively, like, they're not going to tell you much about which offenses are good going against them, because every offense is going to be good going against them. So like, they'll be fun, but again, this is where like 20th sounds low, but really not. Like, I'm excited to watch this team for a number of reasons. I just also want to watch other teams more to learn more about how, like, the end game of this season.
If there's like a 20% chance of Ben Simmons going to the Timberwolves, and that alone moved them down like 15 spots and more rankings, that means, and I'm doing the NBA math thing here, but that means that like Mort is baking in like an 80 spot decrease for a Ben Simmons trade.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. He'd rather watch the G League.
Which, like, fair.
All of your
fair
league. Like,
do your thing.
Yeah. No, that's fair criticism. I am just saying that I really dislike the way that he presents. So, and also, like, again, even without that implementation, I still don't have the Wolves more than like league average, because there's the organizational thing as well, and I know Towns well, again, with the caveat that he doesn't show us anything new. And I didn't even touch on D'Angelo Russell, but I mean, his decision making is awful, and I don't enjoy watching him play. I think he is empty calories all around.
All right, that was a lot of Timberwolves talk, so let's move to our 14th ranked team. Speaking of aggrieved fan bases, the Los Angeles Lakers come here. Adam is highest on them at 7th. I have them 13th. Dan, 19th. Mort, 20th. Adam, why so high on the LAARP Lakers?
I think because Dan and I have had disagreements on the podcast. I'm not sure we've had a more heated disagreement than when I said that LeBron James was showing signs of decline during the playoffs last year, even acknowledging that he was coming off the ankle injury and everything. So to me, I want to have them high because I don't know how much longer this extended prime is going to last. As sacrilegious as it sounds to say that, I want to watch peak LeBron James as much as I possibly can. I'm also excited to see whether it's a train wreck or if he can somehow adjust his playing style, referring, of course, to Russell Westbrook. The first preseason showing was a disaster, I think, like 0 points, 7 turnovers. There's going to be a learning curve here, but he's playing with one of the highest IQ players of all time now in LeBron James. So, yeah, Anthony Davis is probably going to get hurt at some point for at least some stretch of the season, but give me this before it's gone.
That's
a great way to spin that one. I am not sure if I put them too low because of the potential car crash theory here, where if the Westbrook fit is just so bad, are you going to derive sort of a sadistic pleasure from that? And they can really get up and down the floor even more so than they did last season. I'm just like, I don't know. How much are they going to care about the regular season? And if the Russell Westbrook, you know, there are only so many times that I could watch Russell Westbrook look off LeBron James in the fourth quarter and, you know, brick a mid-range contested jumper where it's just not funny. anymore. And also, they're already backing off of AD playing center, where it's pretty much known that DeAndre Jordan's going to start. We know Dwight Howard's going to play some minutes. I get it's not always necessary for AD to play center, but like that's part of them being most entertaining would be AD at the five. And if you're going to tell me all of a sudden, which would be a 75-25 split is closer to 50-50, that's going to pull it away from that. There is, though, as Adam mentioned, just like if this is terrible or even just seeing them work through the motions until you figure out a way to make it work, there's definitely that intrigue there. And I think the best thing he said, though, was you should appreciate LeBron now just because this is age 37 season, which is just so weird to say. And maybe that would force me to nudge them up as the year goes on. But they're another team where it's like I look at Miami and I'm like, come talk to me during the playoffs. It's the same thing here with the added element of I might not even want to watch them then, depending on what Russell Westbrook's role is.
And yeah. I fully acknowledge that my rationale is a little bit flimsy. It is very much predicated.
It's not flimsy. LeBron's the greatest basketball player of all time.
I can't really objectively back it up because there are so many fundamental issues with this team, especially with regards to watchability. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, when LeBron James is on, like, I'm going to watch him because those declines come hard and fast when they do come, and I want to make sure I get as much in as I can.
Yeah. And I didn't go by, like, how many games each team is on national TV, but with the Lakers in particular, I know they're always one of the league leaders in national TV games. So I think we'll get enough of them in high-profile games that, like, I don't know that I'm ever going to watch a Lakers-Rockets game or a Lakers-Thunder game because they're just going to beat the pants off of, you know, whichever teams they're not on national TV are probably going to be Lakers versus bad team. They're going to blow out the bad team and rest everyone by halftime. It'll be Carmelo Anthony and Rajon Rondo chucking shots in the third quarter, and no one needs to see that.
Rajon Rondo chucking shots? That would shock me. Normally he's like passing up shots. He is the Ben Simmons of Rajon Rondo's, but please carry on. Sorry.
And that's Rajon Rondo featured on the Dallas Mavericks court.
Now, right.
Which I think it's important to note.
That's why I put Dallas so low in my LP rankings is they put Rondo's name there.
Well,
I didn't see Frank Ntilikina's on there either. And he's one of the longest tenured Mavericks. He's been there longer than Rondo, right?
Speaking of, the Dallas Mavericks are our 13th ranked team, and this is one where Mort, you had them 3, I had them 8, Adam had them 12, so you're like, how did they finish so low? That would be thanks to Mr. Dan, who had them 26th, and Dan, I'm guessing this is the team that you referred to back in the intro in terms of, you know, heliocentric teams with a lot of question marks otherwise.
Right. And I'm not getting to the point where and I never didn't enjoy watching James Harden, but we are getting to the point where are the Mavericks as reliant on Luka to manufacture everything on offense as the Rockets were with James Harden, you know, even with CP3 at times, but before the CP3 days. But my main reason for dragging them down is this, and I have actual questions before this stuff popped up where what is Kristaps Porzingis going to be just in general? Can he move better on defense? What is the biggest factor for me, though, is what is the head coaching downgrade here? And I want to make it clear. It's a downgrade from Rick Carlisle. You have Jason Kidd talking about not taking as many threes, letting Porzingis get in the post or dribble into mid-range pull-up jumpers. I don't want to see that crap. I don't want to see it. I don't care if he was a little bit more efficient in the post last year. I don't care if he needs more shot variance. If that's like your focus going in and you're starting him at power forward already and you're not even playing him next to the big who makes the most sense next to him, which is Maxi Kleba to start. I would also argue that Willie Cauley-Stein would be the second most should be guy to play next to him. No, it's going to be Dwight Powell. I already just have this team looks like it's built to play out of its mind in the regular season. And I'm just overly confident that Jason Kidd is going to F it all up at this point based off what he has said. And I know we could be reading too much into his comments. I could be hyperbolizing all of this. We will still see Luka take a bunch of threes. He is still highly entertaining, but maybe it's that knownness now creeping in, like Mort said for me here. I just have so little faith in who is controlling this roster at the moment. And then even when you look at, all right, let's say, let's just pencil Rick Carlisle in as the coach here again. Like, what are we really watching at that point, too? I like Reggie Bullock. It's fun to see him be more of this high-volume three-point shooter and more of a movement shooter than I think he's been in the past. Are they going to get him going with a ton of motion? That's not necessarily something Jason Kidd's teams have been known for. in the past. I'm very curious about what they end up looking like, but I don't have enough confidence that I'm going to enjoy what they end up looking like, even if they wind up winning 50 plus games.
That's completely reasonable. I know Mort and I share the same concerns about Jason Kidd as do, like, you know, I know Matt Moore has been harping on this as well of the Action Network. Is like, you just can't, you don't know what to predict because it's not like we haven't seen Jason Kidd before. I mean, we've seen him as a mediocre head coach before, and that isn't to say that he couldn't have improved in the last 5 years. Maybe being around LeBron and the Lakers taught him a lot, and he'll be, you know, newly enlightened about how to play 21st century basketball. But as you mentioned, Dan, the quotes coming out from him so far this preseason have not been encouraging in that regard. Also, any game that Luka misses for any reason will be completely unwatchable because they are so reliant on him. So in retrospect, I might be a little too high on this team. Like, having him that high is completely Luka, but there are a lot of question marks. I'm nervous about this team.
When you say Jason Kidd is a mediocre head coach, are you baking in the improvement? Yeah. Now, are we allowed to curse on this podcast? I can't remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
My notes verbatim about this team just say, fuck off Jason Kidd, let them shoot threes. That's all I wrote. Yep. All I had prepared.
Yep. That's really all you need. We could.
And look, if they don't, if none of this stuff ends up actualizing within games, then get a head coach who can have better press conferences too, because they're talking about, well, people are overreacting to what he said. It's like, he fucking said it. He said that it's not about 3-point volume. He's talking about Kristaps Porzingis needing to maybe get in the mid-range a little bit more. Unless we're completely off on what we think the Mavericks should be doing, I suppose that's possible. The comments themselves are just verging on. They're not verging on. They're just like, they're hopeless. They're hilariously hopeless, or hopelessly hilarious, however you want to frame it.
He's just already anticipating being fired and auditioning for Inside the NBA.
I would like to defend why I had the number three, because I totally agree with you guys. The Jason Kidd, I would have had them one if it hadn't been for the Jason Kidd factor, but I'm also an European. So if I had Luka outside of the top five, I'm pretty sure I would be assassinated within the next 2 weeks. So I had to have them at that level. But here's the thing. Like, Dan, you said it, the knownness. I completely agree. And I've been banging that drum that I want to rate teams higher, that there is an unknownness to it. I'm breaking that rule when it comes to Luka. This might be the player that I enjoy watching the most, not just right now. He absolutely is right now, but over the course of the last 25 years of watching basketball. Like, he's in that tier of entertainment for me, which is why I had him and Dallas in that sense at three. But every ounce of analysis you guys just brought, I completely buy into, because Kidd is horrendous. I think he's going to last no more than 18 months, hopefully less. And I don't believe in this team whatsoever. In terms of results, screw it. I could see them miss the playoffs if Kidd is as horrendous as well. No, it wouldn't shock me.
If Kidd still, if they're outside the playoffs by the trade deadline and Kidd still has a job, that is just out of this world. And look, I might just be overcorrecting because of the Kidd stuff. I still very much enjoy watching Luka play basketball, and he is so unpredictable when he gets inside the arc. And even when you're looking at his step backs and his jumpers, there's like a subtlety to the way he gets them off that can still take you off guard, even though you might know that they're coming. And he has fantastic vision. He is probably one of the like 10 or 15 single most entertaining basketball players to watch in the game right now. Not even probably definitively. The Kidd stuff is just boggling my mind at the moment. The decision to hire him was, all right, he's buddy-buddy with Mark Cuban, Dirk Nowitzki, whatever. Maybe he has improved, and we could still see that bear out, but nothing that has basically come out of their training camp or that Jason Kidd has specifically said makes me want to see this team anymore. And when we're at the time of the year when optimism is supposed to run completely unchecked, that's a huge problem.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the Memphis Grizzlies, our number 12 team. You were highest on them at 7. Adam Hamill had them 11th. Dan 14th. I had them at 15th. So we're getting to the point now where there isn't too much difference of opinion for a lot of these teams. Why do you have them in your top 10?
No, because they just have so many components that could get better from last year to this one. It's not just Ja, right? I mean, Brandon Clarke could take another leap. Jaren Jackson Jr. could take another leap. Desmond Bane could take a leap. Like, there's just so many guys where you don't know whether they're going to duplicate what they did last year or add to it. So that's a level of intrigue there. But they're also fun to watch. I mean, they're athletic. They come up and down the court. They really want to fight defensively. Like, it seems like they just have this very bright exuberance around them, which I enjoy as an observer when I watch them play. I feel that level of enthusiasm for the game, which matters. Like, let's just say it like it is. It matters when young people love to play basketball. And this team, it seems like they're very keyed in on that. There isn't a lot of drama in the media. It's not all about this and this and that, which is outside the game or trade requests and whatnot. It's about hooping. And I really like that. So I that's why I have them so high. I just love the overall composure of this team and how they approach the game.
I might have dinged them a little too much for the downgrade from Valanciunas to Steven Adams. But I, you know I'm high on Jaren Jackson Jr. And I think, you know, this year is going to be very pivotal for him.
Yeah.
I worry what happens if the breakout that we think is coming doesn't happen.
This is true. And this is a fair point.
So that is why I have them at 15. But I do enjoy this team, and I love the young pieces in particular. It's, you know, I just have more questions about them than some of the teams I have ranked a little bit higher. We had a two-way tie at 10 between the Charlotte Hornets and Utah Jazz. Hornets, Dan, you had them highest at 4. I was 11, Adam 13, Mort 15. So, Dan, why were the Hornets in your top 5? That might be a record for the Hornets.
Look, LaMelo Ball is part of this, obviously. That he's going to throw try to throw 10 to 15 passes a game. I want to see every single decision that he makes. What I also really like about this team is they are going to play small, and it's not we're wondering if. They're just going to. That's how they built the roster. They didn't spend on a center. They're not going to play a Kai Jones a bunch. They traded for Mason Plumlee. That's going to have its limitations, certainly defensively. Getting Kelly Oubre Jr. also, you know, that's someone who's going to floor run with LaMelo. Like, I do wonder about the spacing in some of their lineups, but that's incredible. I don't know if people saw enough of Miles Bridges last year. That dude was hitting step back threes at one point. And he can just smash above the rim if he really wants to. Their small lineups, because they're going to be a staple where I think like they're going to have a non-traditional big on the court for more than 50% of their minutes. I'm just going to be endlessly fascinated with what LaMelo does with that. And then also they're in that section of the Eastern Conference where it's okay. If you told me they were the third worst team in the East, I would get it. But if Gordon Hayward is healthy, if Terry Rozier is more first half Terry Rozier than second half Terry Rozier last year, they might just be like unexpectedly really good. And so that's going to want it's going to draw me in as well. And I'll just reiterate one more time, LaMelo Ball. He's already one of the 10 most fascinating players to watch in the league.
Yeah. I'll say this. We had Dave Dufour on 2 years ago for this episode, and Mort, Dave, and I all had them at 30th last year after they drafted LaMelo. We had you guys on. We're all between 23 and 25. So for the Hornets to be a consensus top 15 team and then Dan having them number 4, this is indeed the highest the Charlotte Hornets have ever been on the league pass rankings. So kudos. Hornets.
And look, if they trade Gordon Hayward, I'm bumping it up to top 10.
Just get rid of, put all the anti-vaxxers on one team, and then I can watch every other team. I'll put the anti-vax team down at 30.
We have to give a shout out to Terry Rozier too. Just good in clutch situations last year. And he was a big part of me bumping this team up so much too. Like, that guy was way more fun to watch last year than expected.
Yeah. Agreed. Can we talk about the fucked up Twitter reaction when he signed that deal? Like, people were calling it one of the most egregious overpays in recent history. Like, what the actual, like, what? How did that happen? I don't, like, did people just not realize how good this guy became after he made it to the Hornets? Like, the level of improvement from Boston to Charlotte has been mesmerizing, and for some reason we don't really seem to talk about it a whole lot, especially in the national coverage at all. And I just wonder why. he is legitimately in borderline all-star at this point. Why are we sleeping on him as an NBA
society? He plays in Charlotte, and no one pays attention to that team, except LaMelo will draw more attention. Like, having LaMelo there will draw more attention to Terry Rozier and Miles Bridges and PJ Washington and Gordon Hayward. So it's like he will be the tide that lifts all boats for that team. All right, let's move on to the Utah Jazz, who are also tied. So Adam with highest at 8th. I had them at 9th, Mort 10th, Dan 16th. So Dan, you were the lowest on Utah. Is it like the known quantity or known commodity thing that's kind of putting you down lower on them than, you know, outside of your top 15?
Yeah, there's just like, we know what they're going to run on offense, and they do a great job of ball or like body movement when you're looking away from the ball, but we know like how their offense is going to run at this point. I did hear people talking about maybe they just give Rudy Gobert post-ups to sort of mash on teams that are going to try and downsize against them. I sincerely, genuinely mean this. I have no desire to see that happen whatsoever. And I'm also sort of just wondering, could they be a regression candidate? They're still going to be in that. I view them, Phoenix, and the Lakers as the three best teams in the West, and injuries to Jamal Murray, Kawhi Leonard are obviously part of that. Mm-hmm. But Bojan Bogdanović, or excuse me, Joe Ingles and Mike Conley are both going to be 34 when the season starts. You have Bojan Bogdanović is going to be 32 at that point. Are they regression candidates a little bit? And they signed Rudy Gay, which maybe they downsize in lineups where Gobert's off the court, because I want to reiterate, Rudy Gobert is not the problem. It's the lack of athleticism and above average defenders in front of him that really hurts them when other teams downsize. They haven't addressed that at all. They can play smaller with Rudy Gay, but they haven't addressed that core problem. So Donovan Mitchell, an electrifying player. I love watching Joe Ingles be the Manu Ginobili of his generation. In slower motion, though, that's all fun. But this comes back to, like, you know, if we had like specific categories, it's Mort's knownness factor. And I'm also just wondering, like, is there something here where it's not that it's going to become stale, but it's actually a worse product than what we were seeing last year? Are you going to tell me Jordan Clarkson is going to do what he did last year, this year? I mean, we even kind of saw him fall off towards the end. He was scoring, but his efficiency plunged. So I have those questions. I will say what maybe should force me to put them higher. There has to be a sense of urgency with this team, right? Where you blew a 3-1 lead in the bubble. Okay, fine. It's the bubble. But then you blew a 2-0 lead against the Clippers, didn't have Kawhi, couldn't even force a game 7. I know Conley and Mitchell weren't 100%, but the Clippers didn't have one of the 5 best players in basketball. If this team is like only around 500 or something, 16 games into the season, does something just happen? I don't know what it is. Is it just them making a trade to cut their tax bill? But maybe that should add more intrigue here, because there should be that sense of urgency. But I just feel like I've seen this, and I'm worried that what I'm going to be seeing this season, while still a very effective product, is not going to be as entertaining or maybe even as effective as it normally was.
Yeah, I mean, there have been quiet whispers, I think it's safe to say, about Donovan Mitchell dating back to the COVID, like the start of the COVID era. But even since then, I mean, like, it seems like they smoothed things out between him and Gobert, but I think Zach Lowe in particular has kind of alluded to it a couple times, like Mitchell with the health staff and his ankle injury holding him out of the playoffs, that pissed him off. It does just seem like there's some smoke starting to build around that team. So there is some implosion potential. Adding Hassan Whiteside to the mix probably only increases that. But I will say, I mean, you know, they were, I think, by far the league leader in terms of three-point attempts and made three-pointers last year. So, like, this wasn't just the boring, gritty defensive Jazz of years past. It was like, oh, crap, these guys can bomb away on offense too, which, you know, when those shots were falling, they were super fun to watch. So there's a lot there, but I hear you on having them outside of your top 15, since, like, you know, there aren't a ton of, they're running it back, basically. They added Rudy Gay and Hassan Whiteside, but otherwise it's basically the same team as last year, and it's totally fair to expect them to be a top three seed in the West. The two teams that we have tied at 8th, there is a lot of newness. One of them, the Toronto Raptors, the newness is without Kyle Lowry. The other, the Chicago Bulls. I'm going to give Mort a few minutes to cool down when he sees that the Bulls are tied at 8th. So we'll start with the Raptors. Dan, you have them as your number one team. Adam was 10th, Mort was 13th, I was 14th. So I got to ask you, Dan, why are the Raptors your top team to watch this year?
I don't think they're going to log a single possession in the half court on offense this year. When you just look at the way that they've tried to play during the preseason. I'm more in. I still would have went with Jalen Suggs at four if I were them. I'm more in on Scottie Barnes after seeing him in summer league, seeing him to start the preseason. I love OG Anunoby. He has hit like some post-ups in the preseason, some pull-up jumpers, shown just some flashes as a passer. This team is going to defend. They have to lead the league in players who are between 6'7 and 6'9. They might have the most players in NBA history on a single roster between 6'7 and 6'9. They still have Fred VanVleet, who's just highly entertaining off the dribble, whatever Goran Dragic is going to give you on offense. And I think what they're going to play, they're going to be exhausting on defense. They're really going to push the pace on offense. There might not be like this deliberateness to how they play always. And when you see Pascal Siakam come back and try and slow things down, perhaps it detracts from their aesthetic value, but also them being a team that I think can really party crash the Eastern Conference if they stay together. And so if you think that they're going to blow it up and that's why you don't have them high in the rankings, I guess I would kind of get that. But I would view this, if you told me this team stays the same and they're not dealing with any major injuries, I might consider putting them like fifth or something in the Eastern Conference. I wouldn't trust them in the playoffs. But when you look at their personnel, they seem absolutely built to run amok during the regular season. And so the combination of speed, really seeing OG Anunoby plumb the depths of what he could do, Scottie Barnes' development, and then just the collective defensive disruption that they should have. I think this is going to be the team that I don't log how many games I'm watching, but it could be whatever matchup, whatever day of the week, wherever they're playing, whatever the stakes, and I'm just going to want to watch. And part of that just might be because I'm in love with Utah Watanabe as well and hope that he cracks their 10-man rotation.
That is fair. I mean, OG has looked really good so far in the preseason, as has Scottie Barnes. I will say I would have had them a couple spots higher if they were going into the season fully healthy, but you know, Siakam's going to miss some time, it seems, at the start of the season. Now Boucher is banged up as well, so their front court.
I didn't even mention him blocking jumpers.
Yeah.
I apologize for interrupting, but
he is certainly, I mean, he was super fun last year. I hope he gets minutes. Like Nick Nurse jerked him around last year, so I hope he actually gets to play this year. And we'll, you know, Precious Achiuwa in an expanded role in the meantime should be interesting. Like, if we're talking about just teams with like a lot of question marks, like good, you know, not just like the OKC caliber teams, but teams that could be in the play-in / playoff mix with question marks, the Raptors are definitely, you know, one of the league leaders in that category. So seeing how all of it plays out should be really fascinating, because they're in like the most fun time of a rebuild. That first year after you get rid of like your star leaves and there are no expectations and your young guys can just kind of take a step forward out of the spotlight, this is the best time. So savor this, Raptors fans, because in 3 years you're gonna have someone refuse to take jump shots and ask out like a baby.
Well, Dan just had the number one. Doesn't that put them back into the spotlight?
Is it the other thing is like, why are there not expectations for this team? Kyle Lowry's great, but like, what is the there's drop off defensively when you go from Kyle Lowry to Goran Dragic? What is the drop off offensively if you also just assume that Fred VanVleet gets a little bit more control? This, like, that's the change that this team underwent, is they subbed out Kyle Lowry for Goran Dragic and Precious Achiuwa, and then added Scottie Barnes, a top five prospect who is already just making, they're not always pretty or, you know, functionally correct decisions with the ball, but quick decisions with the ball. Is the expectation that they're just not going to allow themselves to adhere to immediate expectations? I look at this team and I'm like, why are there not expectations? They could be or should be really good, unless they are going to design a route where they're not really good themselves.
Right. No, I think it's, you know, last year, just obvious circumstances like them not being able to play at home all year contributed to their rough season, but you know, COVID like wrecked their team for a couple weeks. But I think just coming off of a down season plus losing Kyle Lowry, they're definitely flying under the radar. I'm with you in thinking like they are at least in the play-in mix. If not, like, could they be that sleeper team for the 5 or 6 seed? If everything breaks right, for sure. But again, I worry like injuries in particular, like for both them and the Pacers, you know, are they going to be upended by those before the season even starts? So that's why I kind of like hedged and put them 14th instead of, if they were fully healthy, I'd have them in my top 10 for sure. Let's go to the Bulls. Mort, this is another podcast hive mind. Mort had them at 1. I had them at 3. Adam was 16. Dan at 18. And Dan, we've been picking on you for the last few teams. So I'm going to go to Adam here, who has them at 16. Why did you have the Bulls outside of your top 15?
Yeah, I mean, as we were messaging before we started to record, like I said, 5 through 20 feels somewhat interchangeable because you can easily justify shuffling those up in any way possible. And honestly, like, had I submitted my rankings after watching Javonte Green just become this defensive menace who's going to be super fun, I'd probably have bumped them up a little bit more. But for me, this is a team with a ton of intriguing young potential. I'm really excited to see what Patrick Williams is able to do if they feature him. I think that there are multiple all-star bursts in his future. But then we know what Nikola Vucevic is. We know what DeMar DeRozan is. We know to some extent what Lonzo Ball is. So I'm curious to see how it's all going to piece together, but I don't know if the Bulls are set up in a way to maximize all of that young potential and to feature growth throughout the season, because they're trying to skip steps in the rebuilding process. They're piecing together a lot of offense first pieces. It could work. It could be super fun. If you're into 130 to 125 games, it is going to be super fun, but there just wasn't quite enough guarantee of that potential being realized for me to bump them up over other teams in that similar range in the rankings. Because again, it's not just that there's like a hair's breadth between 5 and 6, that exists between like 5 and 20 for me in these rankings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mort, you told me yesterday, this is the most fun Bulls team you've seen in a long time. So tell us why they are your number one team on the league pass rankings.
Look, I was a Bulls fan for 22 years. And the low point was basically Cristiano Felicio, Ryan Arcidiacono, and Denzel Valentine running through major minutes every single night. Those players are gone now. Now you're actually playing competent players, even on the bench. You don't have essentially G League players receiving 27 minutes per game. That is a tremendous change of pace. Furthermore, I'm bumping it up to 1 also because I'm a little pissed off at the national media for keeping on disrespecting Zach LaVine. I think he is getting slept on to just perverse degrees. I know there are plenty of people out there who are saying like last season was a fake season or whatnot. Like, but that just goes to show that you didn't really watch him play because he was good the year before as well. So I want to give him due diligence there. Lonzo is exactly what he needs in the backcourt. Like, Zach graded out fantastically as an off-ball player last year, both as a catch-and-shoot guy and as a cutter. Like, he had great, great numbers. Now he's able to play more and more off the ball, be more selective with his shots, which should theoretically catapult him up to a new echelon of offensive efficiency. And he was already damn great last year from an offensive efficiency perspective. So I just enjoy that. I enjoy that whole hustle making. Fully agree with Adam, though. This could go completely haywire and go wrong, but that's part of the intrigue. I mean, they basically said, yo, we're going to do something drastically different. It might work, it might not, but let's roll it out there and see what happens. And I like that approach instead of the traditional Garpax method of, well, we're not going to study before the draft. We're just going to select a guy that we think makes sense because we heard it from one coach 2 months ago or something like that. I just like the change of pace, and that's intriguing to me. Plus, they're young. They're athletic. Well, primarily young. DeRozan is still there. He's not very young. But they're athletic. They can shoot. And I think the defensive concerns, although they're there, I think they're a bit overstated. I do think they have players who can come in and be really disruptive on that end. Does that lead to a top 5 defense? No. No, it doesn't. But I don't think the whole worst defensive team in the league is going to imply. So I just loved seeing whatever the hell is going to happen with them.
I'll say I have them at 3 because Mort has brainwashed me into thinking the Bulls are going to be fun this year. But so hey, they looked really good in the preseason against Pelicans team
consecutive 40-point leads in two games.
Against the Pelicans team without Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson. The victory laps that I saw coming from Bulls Twitter last night during that game, it was like, you guys are taking the preseason a little too seriously. Like
I didn't see that. Yeah. I didn't know if they did. I was kidding with my comment because it's preseason, but okay. Yeah, no, no victory laps. Don't do it, Bulls Twitter. Don't do it. That's dumb.
Like, by all means, be excited about this team, but let's just chill on the preseason.
They've been fun. They've been fun, though.
Yeah. Like, preseason was more for me about, like, individual player performances rather than overall. Like, if you care about the score of a preseason game, you are watching the preseason run.
Right. And good shout on Javonte Green, by the way, Adam, because he's been phenomenal. I mean, I was one of those guys who had him, like, probably end of the roster. Like, yeah, he'll get burned here and there. And then he was inserted to the starting lineup and just did damage. And I don't even care if it's preseason. Like, that kind of effort-based style, that can definitely be duplicated over to the regular season. So
he seems to have great off-ball instincts on defense, which is just not something you typically see from rookie backcourt members. So excited about that. And I really mean no disrespect to the Bulls with my ranking here. Like, I am genuinely excited to watch this team. Couldn't be higher on Patrick Williams. Yeah. I just have questions about whether they're going to prioritize that entertainment value and watchability or chasing a playoff spot with established pieces.
Yeah, I completely hear you. Guess we'll find out.
I just don't see the vision. They're like talking about playing fast. They've talked about putting the ball in Lonzo Ball's hands more in the half court, but you have DeMar DeRozan, you have Zach LaVine, you have Vooch. It kind of confuses me, which is probably why I don't have them higher. If you base it off just preseason, they look like they're going to be fun as hell. And I'll echo everything you guys said about Javonte Green. I think he's 6'4", and they have him like bodying power forwards too. And so if maybe they'll lean into some smaller combinations because they have Vooch and Tony Bradley are like their only centers on this lineup. And Tony Bradley is hurt at the moment, right? So maybe they'll get weird and I'll fall in love with them. And it does seem like they're going to be better defensively than I thought. I don't know that I see the full vision here. Maybe I'm being clouded by how much they gave up to get to this point, or even the best version of themselves. I don't think it was worth mortgaging the extent of their future that they did, which should not be part of this calculus. I'm still very confused by the Bulls. Similarly, how I am about the Lakers and Russell Westbrook, except the Bulls don't have LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Well, if Mort can ding the Timberwolves for a Ben Simmons trade that hasn't happened yet, I will allow you to ding the Bulls for questions about their roster construction and whether they affected their long-term upside. All right, I'm going to group these next three teams together. The Brooklyn Nets came in at number 7 for us, and the Phoenix Suns and Golden State Warriors were tied for 5th. And I'm grouping them together because Adam, Dan, and I all had them within our top 7. Adam has had the Nets as his number 1 team. I had them 4th. Dan had them 7th. Warriors, Dan and I had them 6th. Adam had them 5th. Suns, Dan and I had them 5th. Adam had them 4th. Mort.
Yep.
25th for the Nets, 19th for the Warriors, and then 22nd for the Suns.
Yeah.
So I just want to, I'm guessing, you know, collectively, this is just, again, known. We know what these teams are.
Correct.
So we don't have a ton of questions about them.
Absolutely. I mean, that is literally all that there is. And even Golden State, I'm kind of wanting to move up a little bit simply because of the Jordan Poole factor. Because we don't know what Jordan Poole is quite yet. It seems like his trajectory keeps going up and up and up. So that could change matters a lot. But this is all about the known quantities. Absolutely. And then you guys might be weirded out why I then have the Milwaukee significantly higher. But we'll get to it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I will say for the Warriors, whether James Wiseman takes a big leap in his second year is at least like, I think they have more questions than the Suns and the Nets do.
Yeah.
Well, the Nets, maybe not with Kyrie, but in terms of development, like if Wiseman takes that big leap, but then hell, like I just want to see Klay Thompson play basketball again. It's been 2 years and that's 2 years too long. So whenever he makes his debut, I'm excited to see that. Adam, why did you have the Nets as your number one team?
Yeah, I mean, I'll address right off the bat, like if you dropped this team because of Kyrie Irving, I get that. But I'm just coming off watching that Milwaukee Bucks, Brooklyn Nets playoff series. And the Nets play such an entertaining brand of basketball, even when all their pieces aren't fully healthy, which, you know, we obviously can't count on. Kevin Durant looks like he's right back in there for the conversation about the best player in the league, and he is such an aesthetically pleasing player to watch. James Harden, I think the NBA watching world has largely overcorrected on him in terms of entertainment. We're like, yeah, he dribbles the ball into the ground. He takes way too many free throws. He baits too many fouls. He's still a brilliant basketball player who puts on a decision-making clinic night after night. I'm really intrigued to see what Nicholas Claxton can do as he continues to grow. Is he going to get minutes with LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin back on the roster? Not as many as I would have liked, but he's still going to entertain. I like pieces like DeAndre Bembry in smaller minute roles, but it comes back to Durant more than anything else. Just that level of basketball brilliance is something that I want to appreciate while it's there.
That's completely fair. I mean, the Kyrie questions notwithstanding, we tackled those in our last episode, so we don't know what's going to happen there, but the Nets are clearly going to be one of the best teams in the league with or without him. Number four on our list, I feel personally responsible for having them this high, the New Orleans Pelicans. I had them second. Mort, you were ninth. Dan was 10th. Adam was 14th. I think you guys are all Nikhil Alexander Walker haters, and I don't appreciate it.
You should see some of Dan's recent texts about him. He is not.
Good. I was going to say, he looks incredible.
He is.
I'll say, I mean, obviously, number two, the number one reason I have that number two is Zion. Hopefully he's healthy. Hopefully he makes it through the full season healthy. Dan, you've referenced, you know, potential blowups here. Lord knows there's been a lot of smoke about Zion's frustration with the Pelicans and his family wanting out already. So if things go south, that there's also some, you know, off-court drama elevating this. But I think, you know, seeing Walker in a bigger role in particular, Alexander Walker in a bigger role in particular, the transition from Devontae Graham or from Lonzo Ball to Devontae Graham, you're losing something defensively. But, you know, Graham, Lord knows that guy has not seen a three-point shot that he isn't willing to take. So I'm curious to see how that fits. Also, Zion and Valanciunas together in the front court, like, does it make sense conceptually? Maybe not from an offensive spacing perspective, but like, those are just two giant oak trees. Like, they are gonna lay the absolute hurt on some people this year, so I'm excited to see that. And then Eric Bledsoe is no longer on this team, so they already get a plus five jump for me just for that. Like, seeing Alexander Walker and hopefully Kerry Lewis Jr. in a bigger role. I don't know. Maybe I'm too high on this team. Adam, why did you have him at 14?
It's the Zion question, where he is so entertaining to watch, especially now that he's been unleashed as that ball handling decision maker within the offensive half court setting. How available is he going to be? Like, we're already hearing about this foot surgery that he had over the offseason. He's probably not going to come in to the regular season in ideal shape, and it's going to be a process for him to work his body to the level that it needs to be at. So I'm also very intrigued by a lot of these pieces. I think Devontae Graham is an extremely intriguing fit with this roster. I think the world of Jonas Valanciunas, who continues to be massively underrated. Even guys like Herb Jones could be entertaining as, you know, back of the rotation pieces who just try really hard on defense when they are on the court. But I don't know how often we're going to get peak Zion. And that makes me question how high I want to put them, because if he's not there, like, I can do without watching Brandon Ingram monopolize offensive possessions and Devontae Graham jacking up a few too many threes and them hindering Alexander Walker's offensive growth. Like, if Zion's not there, this team drops so far in my personal rankings, and I just don't know how often we're going to see the peak version of him yet.
That's fair. I will say, I want to shout out Trey Murphy as well, who's looked really good in the preseason, just has zero conscience, and just having that another, you know, between him and Graham, having two more conscienceless shooters around Zion, and especially with Zion Valanciunas combination, should be fun. And also Najee Marshall showed some flashes last year. So there are a lot of young guys who I think are poised for bigger opportunities. I think this Pelicans team, you know, because Zion is putting so much pressure on them, they better be ready to take a big step forward this year. So seeing how all of that plays out, that is, you know, why I'm going to be intrigued to follow them more than a lot of other teams this season. Milwaukee Bucks come in at number three for us. Mort, you were highest on them at 4. I had them 7, Adam 9, Dan 12. So, Mort, I got to ask, if the Suns, Warriors, Nets got knocked down for we know what they are, do we not know what the defending champions are?
We know who they are, but we also know that people are doubting their ability to repeat. Yes. A lot of people are basically just throwing out of the way, saying, "Oh, this is the net season to win everything." I mean, I think even FanDuel Sportsbook had the Bucks behind the Lakers, right?
Yes, that is correct. Right?
And that to me just seems like, you know, that's a chip on their shoulder right off the bat, and that makes it interesting for me immediately. At the same time, I don't necessarily think we're going to see the Milwaukee starters get a ton of minutes. I think we're going to see them just kind of reserve themselves a little bit for the regular or for the playoffs, which means that we're going to see more minutes for Bobby Portis and like Grayson Allen in the regular season, which is going to change a couple things up. If they add, because of their increased roles in the regular season, more perimeter guys to their rotation in the playoffs, that's also going to make them a little bit more deeper. Dante DiVincenzo is back, presumably healthy, and also for the playoffs. Let's hope. Cross our fingers. So there are some elements here that we haven't really gotten used to seeing that I think is interesting, but it's more so the chip on their shoulders for the disrespect of them being just kind of ignored.
That's fair. That is... And I mean, Lord knows Giannis is just a super fun player to watch. I mean, Adam, you were talking about, you know, knocking the Heat down for the experimentation angle. And we saw that last year with the Bucks, but maybe now they've gotten all of that out of their system. And now they know things that work and things that don't. And they're not going to have to experiment as much, at least with their main rotation pieces. So I think it's completely fair to at least, you know, all of us have them in our top 12. And I don't think anyone would quibble with saying the Bucks are an entertaining team to watch, you know, especially coming off of the title. And now if they play the nobody believes in us chip as well, it's going to please just don't turn into the New England Patriots. That's all I want.
We have to at least mention Jordan Nwora too, as a potential explosion candidate. He has to be included in this discussion, especially if they're not going to be allocating more than 32 minutes a game to starters.
Seeing how that bench rotation shakes out will be really interesting, especially with PJ Tucker now gone. You know, they got pretty thin in part because of injuries last year, but now, you know, Hill is back. Rodney Hood is now there. I mean, Semi Ojeleye, I think Zach Lowe mentioned him as like, it wasn't a coincidence that they got him. They're going to use him, especially as one of their main defensive stoppers off the bench. So there are still some questions for the Bucks that need answering, but we at least know what their main pieces can do. The Denver Nuggets, this is another team. They were number 2 on our list, and this is where Hive Mind came in again. Dan had them highest at 2, Adam at 3. I had them 12th, Mort at 14. Mort, I'm guessing I can speak for both of us and say if Jamal Murray were healthy, they'd both, you know, we both have them in our top 5. This is really just... it's such a bummer that he is not going to be healthy. We don't know when he's coming back. Adam, I know your Monte Morris love runs infinite, but Dan, you were even higher on them. So why did you have them as your number 2 team?
Are we sure that Jamal Murray hasn't already been traded to Philly for Ben Simmons because of Bones Highlands' preseason performance?
I wouldn't complain.
Look, yeah, I know you wouldn't. Jamal Murray is going to come back at some point this year. He would be the guy when you look at it between him and Kawhi. That would shock me. I think it's more likely Jamal Murray plays than Jonathan Isaac would play this season. It's just like, that's when you look at Jamal Murray's knowing what he's going to do for rehabbing. The fact that they were able to find Bones Highland in the draft, looking at how good PJ Dozier is right now. And then you have Nikola Jokic, who is one of the 5 most entertaining players in basketball. When you're watching him play, you have Michael Porter Jr. and he's going to have presumably even more on ball license this year. Can we see him create off the dribble for himself a bit more, even more so than we did last year after Jamal Murray went down, because that wasn't necessarily this huge part of his game. How are they going to play when Jokic isn't on the court? They have both the Greens, but they also have Zeke Nagy. They have, oh my God, why am I blanking on a name right now? They could play like a bunch of different styles up front is my point between having those guys there. You look at Facundo Campazzo, he's going to make some passes and some decisions and play some defense every game. That's going to just make you do a double take. Monte Morris can be, you know, I joke with Adam because of how high he is on Monte Morris. And he is more of this, like, he does a lot of things well, but he's really fun to watch on offense. Like there's more wiggle and slipperiness to him on offense than I think his reputation that precedes him. This team is just so much fun to me. Even like, how many times is Aaron Gordon going to defend point guards for this team? Which became a question I was asking myself during the playoffs a bunch last year. And now you have the added, I had them when I was going through this. They were a little bit lower. And then just like watching Bones Highland in the preseason forced me to nudge them up. I know people might argue Michael Malone's not going to play him because he's a rookie. But like Jamal Murray's not there right now. Bones Highland better at least get some minutes with them. This is a rookie hitting like sidestep threes in the preseason. Like, I'm so excited to see this team, even without Jamal Murray. And now you have to think, okay, even if we get 20, 25 games of the Nuggets with Jamal Murray, that's going to be a rush. And I'm just thinking about, like, I don't know if it'll happen. I need to see Jamal Murray play with Bones, MPJ, Jokic, and Will Barton. Like, that is just, that lineup will give up buckets on every possession, but it'll get buckets on every possession as well.
Yeah, no, I'm intrigued to see how it all shakes out for them. And you're right. Like, if I'm ranking, if Jamal Murray does come back at some point, which I agree, I would be surprised if he doesn't. They'll be top five moving forward. And seeing what MPJ does in this extended role in the meantime, like, I'm probably a little too low on them. But again, it's just like, as Adam said earlier, between 5 and 20 for me, it's like impossible to parse the razor thin differences.
See, I appreciate Dan's detailed answer there, but I think it's even simpler than that for this team. Like, I'll acknowledge the knownness argument for a lot of teams. I just don't think that it applies to Jokic. Like, he is that entertaining where you just don't know what you're going to see when you watch him. You know he's going to dominate. You don't know how. Is it going to be a no-look over-the-head pass? Is it going to be a ridiculous behind-the-back pass into space that somehow works? Is it a water polo pass, the Sambor shuffle? Just, he has so many tricks in the ever-growing bag, and they're all unique. And that alone, to me, like, even if you know that the offense is going to center around him and he's going to put up close to 30 points and 10 rebounds and 8 assists on a nightly basis, you don't know how that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So we will wrap it up with our number one team. This is the only team in which all four of us had them in our top five. All four of us had them in the top three. The Atlanta Hawks, I had them highest at 1. Morton Adam had them at 2. Dan had them at 3. I had them first because they have Stockholm syndromed me into just it. I mean, they're super fun. Like, despite Trae Young's shenanigans, which hopefully the NBA will cut down on this year with all these rule changes, like the grifting will, you know, go away to some extent. But Trae Young's really fun, even outside of the grifting. They're a super deep team. Like, there's no reason to expect regression for this team. All of these guys are so young still. And then you're adding Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter back to the mix, who played sparingly because of injuries last year. So, Adam, I want to wrap with you. As our resident Hawks guy here, what's the number one thing that you're excited to watch about this team, or the biggest question that you have coming into the season about this team?
That's a tough question because there are just so many things to be excited about. I think the number one is just seeing the development of Hunter and Reddish, because what they do and how far they rise has far-ranging implications, because this team is eventually going to run into money issues, and they're going to have to prioritize re-signing one. And if they want to bring back both because they've developed accordingly, they're going to be moving other pieces, especially after the John Collins extension. So it's knowing that there is somewhat of a limited time frame here before significant changes have to occur, and that there are just so many intriguing pieces who could develop. Like, we haven't even mentioned Sharif Cooper, who looks like he's going to make a two-way impact as a rookie. We haven't mentioned Jalen Johnson, who is just full of so much tantalizing potential and athleticism and well-rounded play. What if Okongwu continues to develop? And he looked great in brief spurts in the playoffs last year. So I think that the answer to the most excited and biggest concern is kind of the same thing. is that there's almost like too much intrigue here. And we're going to have the feeling that somebody is getting the short end of that stick. Like maybe it's with DeLon Wright on board, like Cooper doesn't have enough minutes to show what he can do. Maybe it's that Jalen Johnson gets buried on the bench or Clint Capella is healthy and plays too many minutes. I don't really have any concerns about the Trae Young entertainment value, even with the new emphasis in the rules about not baiting fouls quite so frequently and not giving calls when the particularly egregious examples occur. He's still such a brilliant offensive player who puts you in a decision-making nightmare whenever he has the ball in his hands. And it's just, it's so fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, they are just an avalanche. Like the depth of this team, you know, we talk about like the Mavericks without Luka, if he isn't playing their bottom five team, even if the Hawks don't have Trae Young on a given night, they're still going to be really fun to watch because of the depth that they have with DeLon Wright and Lou Williams and Sharif Cooper now. Like, I just don't see a piece there that there's no one there. Like, if he misses 20 games, the wheels are just going to totally fall off for this team. So, you know, a fully healthy Hawks squad, I think, is going to be one of the most electric teams in the league to watch. But even, you know, hedging against injuries, like worst case scenario, if John Collins goes down, they have, you know, like Danilo Gallinari can slide in there, Jalen Johnson or DeAndre Hunter. Like they're just so deep, and I'm so jealous, and I hate them so much that I had to put them in number one. And that, I think, is a good way for us to wrap up possibly the longest NBA podcast episode in history. But I hope you guys had a ton of fun. We loved having you back on. So one more time, Adam Frommel, Dan Favalli of the Hardwood Knox podcast. Adam, one more time, can you let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can, anything else that you like to plug?
Yeah, first and foremost, thank you so much for having us on. Always a great time, and it's a blast preparing and discussing this topic. You can find me on Twitter at Frommel09, F-R-O-M-A-L-09. You can find the Hardwood Knox podcast at Hardwood Knox, spelled like it sounds. Also, make sure to follow NBA Math. That's NBA underscore math. And that's what we got going on right now.
Cool. And then Dan, can you let our listeners know where they can follow you on Twitter one more time and anything else you would like to plug?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Dan Favalli, F-A-V-A-L-E. Follow NBA Math at NBA underscore math. And Echo, follow Hardwood Knox, spelled exactly as it sounds. And most importantly, thank you guys so much for having us. This exercise is always super instructive and a blast to just go through.
Well, we love having you on, as always. We'll do it again next year if you guys are down. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined, as always, by Morton Supreme Bay Jensen and by our special guests, Adam Frommel and Dan Favalli. Have a good weekend, guys.
You too, man. Don't die.
All right.